Greetings and welcome into today's edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. Adriano Del Monte will join us in just a little bit as we look ahead to the Derby della Madonnina in Serie A between Inter and AC Milan. But we start today's show with the topic that dominated yesterday's show. Harry Maguire, what's gone wrong with him, and should he start for Manchester United on the weekend against Newcastle? For more, we welcome in Shaka Hislop, Frank LaBeouf, and Stuart Robson. Robbo, I'm going to start with you. Quite a fall from grace, and I'm not just talking about Maguire. I'm talking about you as well, because you've come on this program and said Harry Maguire is as good as, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, Virgil van Dijk. How do we explain what's happened to Maguire recently?
Well, when I saw him for Sheffield United, when I saw him for Leicester, when I was seeing him play for England, he was as good as anybody coming out with the ball. He looked to be a good defender. But as happens to every player that plays for long enough in the professional game, you have a bad time. And it's all started from his problems in Greece, when obviously whatever happened out there, it's caused him a problem. He's lost his confidence. And when you lose your confidence, you lose your ability to see passes. You lose your that little spark where you don't react quite quickly enough. He looks slow now when he's turning. He looks slow when he's making runs because he's lacking confidence. He's thinking rather than reacting spontaneously. And now he's not seeing those passes. And everything that he gets wrong, he's being punished for. The sending off, he's given away goals. So at the moment, he's a player that is really struggling. And he's struggling badly because he's lost all his confidence for whatever reason.
Right, Shaka, what do you think? Is this just a bad spell? Or are we seeing maybe the limitations, the ceiling on Maguire's game?
Listen, it very well could be what we see from Harry Maguire for quite some time. But the thing is, I'm with Stewie in that Harry Maguire is a very talented defender, and we've seen that in his everything we've seen from him up to this point. But also on the show yesterday, Frank and Stevie made very good points in that as a player playing with no confidence, sometimes you just have to go back to doing the basics. And Harry Maguire is doing everything but. He's trying to take responsibilities in areas that he really shouldn't. You look back to the 6-1 defeat at Spurs and how he tried to impose himself in situations there that he really didn't. And I'm thinking about the goal where he headed the ball away from Shaw. And then again in the England game a couple of days ago, he gets two bookings making lunging challenges in the opposition half of the field. I mean, that's just poor decision making as opposed to bad defending. And Harry Maguire has just got to get back down to basics. Sit in the middle of a back four or the back three or whatever it may be. Kick the ball in the stands if that's what it's called for. Tidy up what needs to be tidied up. And try not to do anything special, and don't impose yourself, or don't try to impose yourself on the game in bailing yourself out of this quagmire that you found yourself in. But he's doing all the wrong things, and it's only getting deeper right now.
Frank, I'm reminded of some comments from last season about Maguire from Rafael van der Vaart, who basically said, at any Sunday game, I can find three players who can do the exact same thing. Is it possible that Harry Maguire's just not that good?
Well, I think what van der Vaart said is a lot extreme, I think. And you don't captain Manchester United without any qualities, without offering to the people who are going to hire you something special who make them think that you are right for the spot. Harry Maguire, as Robbo said, you know, showed real talent when he was playing for Leicester. And when he came with the national team and played the World Cup, I mean, he was very, very good. I think since last summer, especially, he lost something on the holidays. You know, something happened, and maybe he's not over it, and he has to deal with it. But since then, you know, we don't see the same player more confident about his quality. He needs a lot of confidence in his game to make sure he's going to be good, because he's slow. Everybody can see that. He has a talent, but he's slow. He can be useful in headers, but when he has to tackle, and we saw that on the second yellow card, he's sometimes just at the edge, but most of the time too late. So he has to work back on what works for him. And as Shaka just said, as we mentioned with Stevie yesterday, he has to go back to the basics. He has to work with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Works with some people, you know, who have confidence on him, and we can give him some trust back. to work on his quality and not on his weaknesses. And maybe we're going to see Harry Maguire's back.
I hear a lot of good, a lot of compliments, always followed by a but. The but in this case, Bravo, is that he's slow. Can you be slow and still a good center back, still a good center half at that level, at the level demanded of not just Manchester United, but their captain?
I think when he's playing well, he isn't. He's not really slow. He's not got electric pace. I think at the moment, with lacking confidence, and I said it earlier on, you lose that awareness, that spontaneity. You start to think about what you're doing, and it takes you a yard to get into your stride. And that's what's happened to Harry Maguire. He's not the quickest player in the world, but I don't think he's the slowest either. I think he can be a top-class player once again. It's just he's lost that confidence, and he needs backing off his manager. He needs backing off the players in the squad. And if the manager and the coach start doing some defensive work and getting them better all organised, it makes it easier to play in a back four or a back three, whatever they want to play in. But when you're disorganised, as Manchester United look to be, it's hard for individual players to get their game right. I saw a lot of players over the years didn't have anywhere near as much talent as Harry Maguire, but because they were in an organised back four, look good players.
Frank, go on.
Yes. You can be slow, but compensate with, anticipation. I wasn't the fastest player in the world from far, but the anticipation was crucial. On top of it, with the national team, he plays a little bit on the left side when they play at three at the back, which is completely not his position. But if you go back to the past, I don't think Gary Pallister was the quickest guy in the world. I don't think Laurent Blanc was the quickest guy in the world. Far from there, Ronald Koeman as well. But they compensated with a very big intelligence of the game. Harry Maguire has to go there in order to, compensate that slowness and that he has, but there is nothing much to do. He's like that. He's tough, he's big, he has a advantage for that, but of course there is problems because you're too big and too strong.
One more thing quickly on Harry Maguire. On yesterday's show, Frank said it would kill him if he got benched. I know we're saying he needs confidence, Shaka. What would you do in this situation? You're the goalie. You know what it's like to play behind a shaky center half. Would you want him starting in front of you?
Listen, if I'm Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or Guy Southgate for that matter, I continue to play him. And I tell him exactly as we've all been saying so far. Just do these simple things. Don't try to impose yourself on the game. And the challenge here to that is, and going back to your previous question about whether you can be a slow defender in the game today, absolutely yes. But you have to, the team has to play to that. And I say that because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer spends the kind of money that he does in Harry Maguire. And Manchester United, as a team, can't cater to somebody who isn't quick over the ground. They are so lacking in confidence as a back four, as a defensive unit, that they have to press high up the park. They have nobody who sits in front of the back four and offers any kind of protection. So in an effort to counter that, they press high up and as early as they possibly can. Once you play out of that pressure, players like Harry Maguire and his lack of speed right now gets exposed, and that's what you're seeing. So it's a double-edged sword here. Harry Maguire is making things worse for himself by imposing himself on situations that he really doesn't. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, certainly at club level, is not playing the kind of system I think that protects Maguire's deficiencies. And that high pressing only exposes them.
So Harry Maguire very much a problem, or at least a question for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It looks like Bruno Fernandes may be a question for the Manchester United manager as well. Let's look into some comments made by Fernandes while he was away with Portugal. Quote, and this is talking about halftime of the 6-1 defeat against Spurs. There's been a lot of speculation about that. I believe it is a way to destabilize the group. What was said is in no way true. I was replaced at halftime. It is true by technical option. The coach told me that the game was almost over and that we would have a lot of games ahead of us. Got it. I was not satisfied, but said nothing that could harm the group. Do not use my name, my colleagues, or the coach to make trouble at Manchester United. The atmosphere is good and the team is ready to give an answer in the next game. Some would say where there's smoke, there's fire. Rabo, you're one of the ex-players on this panel. Give us a little translation. Are you surprised at just how adamant this was from Bruno Fernandes?
Not at all. When you're playing in a top team, there's going to be arguments between the manager and a player. There's going to be arguments between players. There's always going to be that at halftime. I've been in dressing rooms where players have actually had a fight. I've seen a manager pin players up against the wall. They are losing the game badly. He's got to make a decision because they've gone down to 10 men. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has taken Bruno Fernandes off because he thinks with 10 men, he's not going to be too much value to the side. So he's taken him off. And Bruno Fernandes is not happy with that. He's probably had a little row with him. That happens in football. That's not a major problem. It's a major problem at the moment to the press because Manchester United are losing games. That's why there's all the smoke that's going around this.
All right, gentlemen, let's make some picks. Manchester United facing off against Newcastle. Shaka, you got first dibs. Newcastle, one of your many former employers. Who do you think is going to win?
Right now, well, it's tough to say Newcastle are on a roll. Good result against Burnley. Got a very lucky penalty against Spurs. But they're playing with some confidence and at home. But Manchester United, there has got to be some kind of a response. I don't think it's enough of a response away to Newcastle United to get them all 3 points. So I'll sit on the fence here and say that this is going to be a draw. Newcastle, who are playing well, playing with some confidence against a Manchester United, who I hope are going to take the approach of a wounded animal, so to speak. But still, not good enough to get all three. A point apiece.
Robbo, based on what we've seen recently from Manchester United, they desperately need the 3 points. Will they get it?
I think they will get it because I think Steve Bruce, whenever he's managed Newcastle United against what are considered the big teams, he goes very defensive, he goes really deep, they play with one up front, and I think that will play into Manchester United's hands. They'll have lots of the ball, and I think Manchester United eventually will score their goal and win the game.
Frank, you agree?
Yeah, it's possible. But because I see the frame behind Shaka's head, you know, I want to say a draw just because of the frame. Just because of that.
There you go.
Yeah, baby.
Our opinion is never at all colored by bias here on ESPN FC. Thanks, guys. Plenty more coverage on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Make sure to download it. Plenty of discussion on Project Big Picture, a lengthy one. Dive in.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Serie A back with a bang this weekend. 5 matches on Sunday, the one on Monday. But my, look at that Saturday slate. Derby della Madonnina, Inter and AC Milan. Plus you got Napoli and Atalanta. Should be a fun match to watch in Juventus there. No CR7 should be in action Saturday afternoon. For more, we welcome in Adriano Del Monte and Stuart Robson back with us. Adriano, I'll start with you since you're in Milan. Give us kind of the scene on the ground there ahead of this Derby della Madonnina. Inter has dominated this rivalry for a long time, but nobody's talking about that right now. People are talking about the increased number of COVID-19 cases, not just around Italy, but specifically in Antonio Conte's squad.
Absolutely. Inter have won the last 4 Derby della Madonnina fixtures against AC Milan, but they will be without 6 players due to the COVID-19 crisis here in Italy. The numbers are rising. There is cause for concern, but certainly on the pitch, plenty of concern for Antonio Conte's men. We come into this busy schedule now where Inter will obviously rejoin the UEFA Champions League and plenty of action to come. But looking ahead to this weekend, it will be a different look into Milan's side, particularly defensively, with 2 key players set to miss there in the form of Skriniar and Bastoni. So we could see a couple of changes for Conte. Of course, the big news, though, for AC Milan, Zlatan Ibrahimovic is back, and I'm certain he'll be keen to score and lead Milan to, well, a rare recent win in this fixture.
Bravo, as Adriano mentions there, Zlatan is back for AC Milan. Inter Milan devastated not just by the COVID-19 situation, by injuries, suspensions as well. The odds makers actually have Inter in as a pretty significant favorite. You still see it that way?
I do, because most of the players that are out, I don't think would have started. Skriniar would have probably started, Bastoni likewise, but they've got Kolarov who can play in that left-sided centre-half position. D'Ambrosio, who's done really well in recent times, playing either as the right-sided centre-half or as the right wing-back. And I still think they've got a good midfield that can outplay AC Milan. You know, Kessié and Bennacer are good players, but they could be outnumbered in that central area. And then you've got the front two for Inter, who are still magnificent when they link up together. Lukaku showed in the international break that he's still playing really well. He's still good with his back to goal. And Lautaro Martinez works off of him. So I still think Inter are the favourites for the game, even though AC Milan are playing very well and the manager's done a fantastic job for them.
Adriano, I wonder, who do you suppose is under more pressure in this match? We have Milan, who are undefeated in the league, undefeated across all competitions so far this year, but Inter Milan definitely came into the campaign with much higher expectations.
No doubt about that, and Inter Milan are under pressure coming into this match. These are the matches that they must win if they are to finally end Juventus' dominance here in Italy. But look, Milan unbeaten in 19. They've made that perfect start to the season. Three wins from three, with all due respect, against the likes of Crotone, Bologna and Spezia. This is definitely a step up in class for them. So pressure on Inter, but I think Milan now have set the stand and they'll be expecting a positive result here this weekend. And I think they're more than capable of achieving it.
Adriano, let's move off the field here. We've all been following the saga between Juventus and Napoli. Not only are Napoli going to lose this match as a forfeit, going to go down in the books as a 3-0 defeat because they didn't travel to Turin, they're also going to be docked a point. This all after the local health authorities told Napoli not to go. From the outside looking in, this seems extremely harsh against Napoli. What's the reaction there in Italy?
Exactly that. 3-0 is one thing, but the one-point deduction another. We are expecting that Napoli will appeal the decision, I think rightfully so, and I would be shocked if that one point at the very least isn't taken back. So, look, it does set the precedent now going forward if and when this does happen again. And as I mentioned earlier, the surging case numbers here across Italy, you do get the sense that we will have another situation very similar in the not-too-distant future. We've seen a number of cases at Genoa particularly. So one to keep an eye on, but I certainly think we haven't heard the end of this saga between Juventus and Napoli just yet.
So what do we think then happens, Adriano? Should we get to this situation again? The local health authorities tell a team, specifically Napoli, not to travel. Are they supposed to go against those directives, or are they just going to keep forfeiting these matches?
Well, it's a very complex situation, of course. We know that the season started a little later than previously it would have. We know that there are the European Championships next summer as well. So the current rule states that if you have 13 players available to play, then you must play and you must take to the field. And I think they're trying to do their very best to adhere to those rules. And in what is a very difficult time, obviously health and everyone's safety is most important. But if we are to continue with the season, then I think that's the rules that we'll be adhering to. But for what happens beyond here, time will tell. I do think, as I said, Napoli will get that point back at the very least.
Is there some concern that the season may at some point be in jeopardy? I mean, we saw the outbreak with Genoa. We have the Juventus team in isolation now. This is going to become untenable should it continue this way.
Of course, we are very real about the situation. There were a number of people here in Italy who were questioning the recent international break and why that went ahead. Two international breaks within the space of a month to get the new season underway did feel like a lot. Of course, when we look at Inter and Milan this weekend, the likes of Lautaro Martinez, Alexis Sanchez, Arturo Vidal, all returning from South America. It's a lot of travel to be taken by these players in the current climate. So, look, there is concern that the season will have a few more issues, but so long as we are best prepared and equipped to handle it as best we can, that's all we can do at this very difficult period in time.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Plenty more on Italian football on the latest edition of the Serie A Awesome podcast. Kay, Matteo, Nikki, Mina, and sometimes Gab covering all things from Serie A.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Liverpool looking up at Everton in the Premier League table as we get set for the Merseyside derby on Saturday. Carlo Ancelotti's team, a perfect 4-for-4 so far. We welcome back Frank and Robbo. Robbo, I'll start with you. Jurgen Klopp said he preferred to lose 7-2 than 3-2. Of course, the 7 goals against Aston Villa, plenty to think about during the international break. You believe him?
No, you never want to lose the game 7-2. I think what he's trying to say is that it highlighted many flaws that they've got. If they'd have lost 3-2, they might have thought they were a bit unlucky, but some of their defending was really poor. Alexander-Arnold made poor decisions when to press the ball. They were trying to hold this high line. I'm sure they must think about that and try and reverse it slightly. They were a good defensive team over the last 2 years. Why want to try and play this much higher offside line, which they're not doing very well at the moment? So just revert back to how you were, and I think Liverpool will be OK.
Frank, Aston Villa scored 7. They're in second. Everton are in first. Should Liverpool be worried?
Of course. They have to respect the two teams, and they have to respect the toughies if they want to have a chance to reverse the process and maybe win against them. They're the favorites, no doubt about that. They made a huge mistake, and I agree with just say Robbo. In fact, you know, you have the big picture. When you make mistakes, you lose 7-2, you have all the big pictures, all the mistakes that you made. So you can maybe correct them. They have to react. They are the contender, so they have to do the job, the business, and win against Everton.
Robbo, much of the talk on Merseyside, just how much that gap is being closed. Give us a prediction. What do you think will happen?
I think Liverpool will win the game. I think it's going to be very tight. Everton are a much better side now, but I'm going to go for a Liverpool win by 2-1 with both their goals coming from their top strikers.
All right, Robbo's got Everton's first defeat of the season. Frank, you see it the same way?
No, don't forget that I put Liverpool third, you know, behind Manchester City and Chelsea. So things has to change, and I say that they may be blasé, and Everton will give all the pride that they can. So I see a draw. I don't see a win for any team, but I see a draw.
Elsewhere on Saturday, we got City and Arsenal. Robbo, it's Pep against Arteta. It's a matchup Arteta's won in the past.
Yeah, they did very well in the Cup semi-final where Arteta got the better of Pep Guardiola. They play some brilliant football down the left-hand side of the field. And I would say it's a good time to play Man City. No Aguero, Jesus looks as though he's out as well. Sterling's only got a chance of playing. So they've not got the firepower that they usually have. And they're not defending very well. Their pressing isn't particularly good. So Arsenal have got the chance to play around that pressure and then make Manchester City's centre-halves and full-backs make big decisions. And they haven't made good decisions in recent times. So Arsenal have got a chance of winning the game. But you still have to say Manchester City are slight favourites.
Manchester City then in 14th, Frank. They've won just one of 3 games so far in the Premier League. I know it's very early in the season to call it a must-win, but there's a lot of pressure on City and Pep here, aren't there?
Yeah, when you want to win the title after being beaten last season by Liverpool, you want to react and you want to show to the world that you deserve to be back at the top. But you have to show it week in, week out, and it's not easy, especially after the pandemic and the preseason pretty much difficult for everybody. And we can see that the results are going upside down. So I think it's time for Manchester City. They are a contender, that they are much better than Arsenal, and they have to show it now, not later.
Robbo, Arsenal fans desperate to see Thomas Partey. You think they'll get a look at him this weekend?
Whether he starts the game or comes on off the bench, I think they'll see some sort of performance from him. He's a good player, playing in that midfield area. He's exactly what Arsenal have been looking for. Somebody that can do every aspect of midfield play. He can get forward, he can pass the ball, he can tackle. He's athletic enough to get and cover the fullbacks and be a good screen for his centre-halves. Good player and a good signing for Arsenal.
All right, then, plenty more to discuss on the Premier League on tomorrow's show. We'll be joined by Stevie and Shaka as we continue the build-up to a massive weekend.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Great weekend of action for you on ESPN+. Championship action starts Friday, Derby County and Watford. More on Saturday between Bournemouth and QPR. Then Asset and Venlo in action in the Dutch top flight. Sunday, Feyenoord, Ajax, PSV, all in action in the Eredivisie. Meanwhile, Preston North End and Cardiff City meet in the Championship. All right, that's all the time we've got for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to you for joining us. Thanks to everyone involved in today's show as well. Hercules Gomez, Adriano Del Monte right now. You all been waiting for Extra Time, where I'm joined by Stuart Robson, Shaka Hislop, and Frank LeBeau. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Got your Twitter questions right here. We have a trio of panelists ready to answer all of them. Stuart Robson, Frank LeBeau, and Shaka Hislop. First question for you, Frank. What do you think of what Andre Villas-Boas has done at Marseille for the last 15 months?
It's very good. It's very good. He recreates a real squad with players willing to work together. He had results. It's hard to know that you're not going to win the Ligue 1 because Paris Saint-Germain is from far, you know, the best team. And of course, the first place is dedicated to them almost every year. It's impossible for any team to compete with them. But he does well. And they couldn't finish the season, but he did enough to give joy to the club, to the fans. And they just won the Clásico in Paris. And that's something special when you're a coach, because in Marseille, it's something big when you win against Paris Saint-Germain, especially away from home. So hats off to Mr. Villas-Boas, because he does very well.
Next up, something we discussed in the show. Jurgen Klopp saying he preferred to lose 7-2 than 3-2. Robbo, given that the Merseyside derby is near, is Aston Villa's 7-2 thumping of Liverpool the best possible wake-up call to help the Reds retain the title this season?
Yeah, in some ways it is, but you certainly don't want to lose 7-2. But what it does, it highlights all the mistakes that Liverpool made defensively. I would pick out Alexander-Arnold. He's not just made mistakes in that game. Sometimes he's pressing the ball when the danger is the space in behind him, and he's losing concentration. The two centre-halves are trying to hold too high a line and letting players run in behind from set plays. They're trying to hold too high a line. Surely, having lost the game 7-2 and some of those mistakes were highlighted, Jurgen Klopp has to go back to how they were playing before, which was a very good defensive formation.
Shaka, are you with Klopp? You prefer to lose 7-2 than 3-2?
No, I'd prefer to lose 3-2, but I think the point that Jurgen Klopp is trying to make is that it could serve as a wake-up call that Liverpool needed. Listen, ever since the league restarted after it shut down for the pandemic, Liverpool haven't been great. They just had so much equity in how good they were in the first part of the season up to that point, that despite not being great, they got results and won the league. And then it's hard to tell a team that, listen, you haven't been good enough when you've just, 99 points? You've just amassed 99 points, yet you're saying to them, listen, you aren't good enough. And even when you started the season, you're not playing that well, but you're picking up wins and somehow it's coming together. And then this kind of highlights all the little things that people have been saying and maybe you have been neglecting or rejecting up to this point. And now you know that you have to put that right. So I understand what Jurgen Klopp is saying in that 7-2. You can't hide behind that and you can't just say, well, we were unlucky and a couple of calls went against us. You've been poor. And that's what everybody's been saying.
Next question is for Shaka, but I actually want to get everybody else's perspective on it at first, just because, you know, field players have a different appreciation of goalies. Can a goalkeeper play 40 to 50 games a season considering they hardly run, asked John, or is it a mentality thing? Robbo, can a goalie play that much in a season considering they hardly run?
I'm not a goalkeeper fan, you know. They don't do any work. What do they do? I mean, they do a little bit of diving here and there, a bit of catching of the ball. They, you know, they can come out with their knees high. They can fly into attackers and foul them and do all sorts of things. They get away with almost murder at times. And then they say that they're tired mentally and physically. Load of old rubbish. Goalkeepers get it far too easy.
Come on, Frank. You got to agree with that, right? Let's be honest. 40 to 50 games should be nothing for these guys.
It is nothing because I think the other ones played around 40 and 50 games. I think I did it a couple of years, you know, where I played more than 50 games a season. And it's possible. So for a goalkeeper, and not for the same, for the Robo's reasons, it's possible to do that. I would say that it's possible because they work hard. You know, sometimes, you know, I have to say that I followed the training session, goalkeeper's training session. It is sometimes very tough, but you know, as Robo said, they have the time to rest during the game, so it's cool.
Shaka, is there a limit? Do you poor guys need a break sometimes?
To the question, yes, goalkeepers can play 40 to 50 games a season, no problem. But then so do outfield players, despite what Mr. Stuart Robson would have you believe. A league is 38 games a year. Add in cup games, Champions League, or Europe if you're in Europe. And there are hundreds of players who play 40 to 50 games every single season. That's not
Shaka,
hard.
Shaka, I hate to say it, but I played in goal twice for Arsenal, with 30 minutes in each end.
Oh, really?
And my heart rate never went up above about 60. So I didn't have to do any running. All I could do was chip balls into the front players. I came out and caught a couple of balls. It was easy. Peter with running through, 1v1. Just go down,
Robbo,
and save it. There's nothing, not a problem.
Robbo, I've seen you play out as well. Your heart rate didn't go over 65 then.
let me tell you, it was up to 180 at that time.
All right, boys. Dan the Orange Man asks, who was the slowest player that you ever played with or against? How would they compare to Harry Maguire? Shaka, the slowest player that you ever played with or against.
I'll tell you who's a good and easy target. John Hartson. I played with John Hartson at West Ham. And let me tell you, unbelievable goal scorer. Unbelievable finisher of the ball. But he moved less than me. He moved a whole lot slower as well. So I'm going to plump for John Hartson as the slowest and least mobile player I've ever played with. He gets two titles.
Was he slower than Maguire?
Listen. I used to beat John Hartson in the long distance running. Ooh. So that takes some doing, let me tell you.
Right. Yeah. The defense rests. There's your proof. Frank, slowest player that you ever played with?
Can we include goalkeepers or no?
it's a fair point.
Why are you picking goalies today?
I feel like they should be off to the side because it's too easy. Now give us a field player.
I think Chris Sutton. Chris Sutton was very good with headers. Not that technical, but he was very slow. Very, very slow. And I think I was quicker than him. I think Dion Dublin wasn't that far. That wasn't that fast, sorry. I played against him most of the time. I really appreciate Dion Dublin. It's where I'm hammering him a little bit. But I was playing against him, against Coventry. Fantastic player, fantastic lad. But I think, I think he was slow. But to go back to the goalkeeper, Ed De Ruy beat everybody. He can beat Harry Maguire, he can beat a snail, he can beat everything. You know, that guy is the slowest guy I've ever seen.
All right, Robbo, on this theme, anybody you want to upset? Any bridges you want to burn? Who was your slowest teammate or foe?
Well, it's somebody I played with, and I'm not sure we got on that well when we played with each other. So I'm going to go for a centre-half at West Ham, Tony Gale. who was a very talented footballer, good passer of the ball. He could read the game quite well, not bad in the air, but he was slow. And for that reason, they used to drop off. Him and Alvin Martin used to drop almost into their own penalty box, which meant we as midfield players had to do a lot of running to cover all the ground. But going back to another one, John Hartson, I had to coach him for 2 years. Let me tell you, he was slow. The slowest player I had to coach.
Frank, question for you. How good of a player was Jean Tigana? He was an integral part of the French team, but hardly spoken about.
Jean Tigana was an absolute tower of the midfield with the national team. We talk a lot about Platini, Giresse, but we don't really talk about Jean Tigana. I know Jean very well. He's from where I was born, and that guy only turned up as a professional. He was 26, I think, and he was very tiny, not very strong, but a heart like that, and fantastic player. I remember what he did the last second of the game against Portugal in semi-final of Euro 84. When he crossed to Platini, but he dribbled, he took on every player, and he was the only one capable of running after 2 hours because there was the overtime. And he crossed to Platini, who scored the goal 3-2, France in final, and then they won the Euro. Fantastic, fantastic player. You know who reminds me a little bit like him? Wijnaldum. Mm. Wijnaldum is a little bit of Jean Tigana. Mm. And we have Kante. Kante, Diarra, who played for Chelsea, Real Madrid, I think Arsenal as well. And Kante as well.
Jean Tigana also, when he went to Fulham, when Jean Tigana went to Fulham and took them from the Championship to the Premier League, or I think it was the Premier League at the time, he had built a magnificent team. They were the best team to watch in the Championship. I think they only lost 2 games, and he was a brilliant coach as well as a brilliant footballer.
Frank, everything under control over there? We're picking up some, is that a cat, a door opening? We got dogs, what's happening?
My wife just came back from work, just so you know, and I've got a little dog, Ginger, and we have 3 cats. We have Lemon to make the cocktail with Ginger, we have Miami that we brought back from Florida, from Miami, and we have CG, who is the oldest one. She's 12, she's tiny, she's a Bombay cat. We love pets. We are crazy about pets. Some people are saying you should have gotten 3 wives and 1 cat, but I guess I got the something.
Who said that?
One of the two other guys. One of the two other guys.
Oh, man.
It was definitely Shaka.
No, it wasn't.
Frank LaBeouf in the big cat import-export game. Another question for you, Frank. Could PSG lose their match against Nîmes this weekend, with Tuchel reporting that there are maybe only 11 players available?
Everything is possible, and it's never easy to play Nîmes, even if we won't see many fans. I think maybe 1,000 or 5,000, I don't know, depending on the stadium capacity. But Nîmes is doing great, and they fight hard, and Paris Saint-Germain is struggling, and it's possible. We saw them losing games during the beginning of the season. But again, everything is possible because, you know, the pandemic, the preseason, people getting the COVID, and nothing is sure for Paris Saint-Germain this season. It's maybe the opportunity, for other clubs to step up and maybe have a chance to beat Paris Saint-Germain this season. Marseille with Villas-Boas, Lyon, Nice maybe also, and other clubs.
All right, one last question, a fun one here. How did you know when it was time to hang up your boots in your playing careers? Looking back on it, do you wish you had played a few more years? Rabo, why don't you take this one first?
Well, I knew as soon as I ruptured my cruciate playing for Coventry at Arsenal, having had serious injuries before, I knew that was the end. I was never going to recover from that.
You knew, like, as soon as it was done?
I knew on the field. As soon as it was done, I had to do, before that, I had a pelvic injury and a pelvic fusion, which I had to do an hour's rehabilitation before every training session, before every game. And then when I ruptured my cruciate, I knew that I couldn't get over the 2 injuries. And in my mind, I called it a day then, and I was 28, I think.
Bravo, the bionic man. Shaka, what about you? I guess when you showed up at MLS.
Just,
uh, That's when you knew.
My last year at West Ham, 2005-2006 season, I knew then that it was time to hang the gloves up, time was coming really quickly. The thing is, we then went on this incredible FA Cup run in 2006, which kind of, you know, changes things. But I knew retirement was very close during the course of that season.
And why?
In the end, I decided to...
Physically or mentally? Why did you know
Sorry?
It was close? Was it a physical thing or a mental thing? When you say, like, you knew you were done.
It's physical, a bit of both, in that it's a tough admission that you have to make to yourself that you just can't do it like you once did, you know, whatever it is. You can't make the saves that you once did. You can't, you know, your reactions aren't as quick as they once were. And you have to say to yourself that nothing you do is going to get it back. You know, you work on different training regimens and different diet regimens, and you do this and you do that, and you put on your socks differently and every differently ridiculous thing to try to cling to playing career to playing career. And at some point you realize now it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how I put my socks on. I'm just not good enough anymore.
Frank, was there a clear...
All I would say, Shaka...
Go ahead.
All I was going to say to Shaka there is that he knew when it was time to retire. The West Ham fans that I knew very well said it was 2 years before that. So I don't know quite what went wrong there.
Good one.
Can you mute Stuart Robson's mic?
No, I don't. I do not have that authority here on this show.
Yeah, The Prem Robo, see, his wife, Shaka's wife, called me, and it wasn't 2 years before. It was 4 years before that he should retire, she told me.
Frank, was there a moment in your career?
Yeah, I was fed up. I was 35 years old, and I played 15 years at the top level, and I was fed up. It wasn't physically, mostly, but it was more mentally. And I found a solution. I went for pre-retirement. A very well paid in Qatar solution. So, he asked me less, demanding, and I went to that. I could have signed another year for Marseille when Drogba signed, and Barthez as well, when they played the final, the European Cup, the Europa League. But I was fed up with the hotel, with the training sessions and everything. I wanted something else. So I went slowly but surely out of the business.
It's interesting, the back end of that question, do you wish you'd played a few more years? You don't hear regret at all, one bit, from any of you. That's surprising to me, Robbo.
Well, I regret it because I had to retire at 28 and had missed two or three years before that as well. So I was told that I would never play football again, would never 24. And I had to prove a lot of people wrong, and I had to do a lot of rehabilitation by myself, go away from West Ham to go and do my own rehabilitation somewhere else because they weren't qualified to do the rehabilitation for me. So I had to prove them wrong, which I did, and play for another 2 years before getting the next injury.
Very well. Thank you very much, gentlemen. That's Robbo, Shaka, and Frank. We'll be back on tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Don't miss it. Plenty more build-up to the weekend across Europe.